Welcome to Profiles in Prosperity, the leading podcast for residential service contractors, sponsored by Service Roundtable and hosted by David Heimer.
Hello, this is David Heimer. Welcome to Profiles in Prosperity. I am delighted to welcome Kim and Buford Martin to our show. Together, they started and built Martin's Heating and Air in Fort Smith, Arkansas. They sold the business in 2021, but have continued to participate in our industry as Service Nation Premier Coaches. In fact, at Service World Expo, Kim was given the Premier Consultant Vanguard Honor for Excellence in Coaching. She holds a Bachelor of Science in Accounting from the University of Ozarks and was Controller, Secretary, Treasurer and board member for a $15 million supply house. In their spare time, Kim and Buford enjoy spending time with their family. They have three daughters and three grandkids, with a fourth on the way. So Kim and Buford Martin, thank you for joining me today. So let's start at the beginning. How did you guys end up in our industry?
Well, we actually met in the wholesale world probably 20 years ago. I worked for a wholesale supply house. I was the CFO for that, and Buford worked in the industry.
I had worked for an HVAC company here in Fort Smith, and I was traveling a lot, so I decided I'd get into the wholesale business and work for another company for approximately 5 years, and then transferred over to the company that Kim worked in, and that's kind of how we met. And after a brief stint there, probably another 5 years, I decided the people I'm helping are not very good and I could do a better job. So we started a company.
So you met at the company that you were working at. And then after about 5 years or so, you guys decided together to open up Martin's Heating and Air Conditioning?
Actually, Buford started it first, and we kind of laugh about it now, listening to how everybody starts a business. You know, they think a technician goes, I can do this in the field because I'm so wonderful at it. But honestly, we were really blessed for our area because I did have the accounting degree and I understood how to handle a back office. Yeah. But I did not jump into it full time right away. It was actually probably 8 years that we ran it, with him growing probably into three different shops, adding more technicians. And then about 8 years later, we sold the wholesale company. It was a third generation and we knew they weren't going to go to a fourth. And that kind of just perfectly led into me working in the company full time and made a big difference in the company.
Yeah, sounds like a very prudent way to do it as well, right? You didn't give up all the employee income. You worked into it gradually.
Honestly, it was very helpful because for years, we just lived on my income and we put everything we can financially into the business.
Tell me more about Martin's Heating and Air. How did you guys end up growing it? What was the story of it?
Well, we started out with zero customers, and as we just went along, adding people and adding, you know, one of the biggest jumps that I can remember was when we added financing, because we didn't finance anything. Because I was a belief that financing was the devil. And so we didn't choose to utilize that tool. And once we started doing that is when we probably went from 750 to 1.5 million in less than a year and a half. And
then, did that sort of convince you that it was more angelic than devil-like?
Yes, absolutely. And the profits looked much better by using it. So we continued on with that and hit about 2.5 million, I would say, and was kind of just stagnant there for several years, I would say, until we joined Service Nation. Once we joined Service Nation and learned the KPIs and started running it that way, then the profits got larger and the ease of running it was better for everybody.
So what was it that convinced you to try financing? I understand, because I hate taking on debt myself, and so I hate to see other people take on debt, but I know that a lot of people do. So I could totally understand where you are coming from on it. But what was it that made you say, okay, I'm going to try this?
Mainly, I had a couple of friends that actually got air conditioners from somebody else because they could get financing. And once they came back to me and said, I would have bought it from you, I just didn't want to spend that kind of money out of my savings account, and we wanted to finance it. And the craziest thing I ever financed was like 27% to a lady, but she wanted it. And if I didn't do it, somebody else was going to. So, and now in our coaching that we do with ServiceNation. That's a big piece of it that I try to convey to the contractors that come to class and boot camp, is you have to have a strategy and you must utilize it.
What do you mean by that?
With the strategy is having different offerings. You can do different percentages or you can do different terms as far as your financing. But you need to have a plan behind it no matter what you're doing, other than here's financing, so you can keep the cost about the same as far as the payment goes for the customer.
So did you guys at that point really lean into financing after it had worked well for you guys? Was that what you led with? I know a lot of contractors will come in and the initial offer is a finance offer.
But we showed both. Once we broke the numbers down, we had probably 50% finance.
Yeah.
So for us, we wanted to see both. We didn't want to alienate anybody. So we would have, this is what your financing is, and this is what the cost is. So if you wanted to write us a check, you could write us a check. If you wanted to finance it, you had that option as well.
Okay. Yeah, good way to do it. So Kim, as the company grew, what were you doing in the back office systems? What were you doing to help the company grow and support it?
I think we were fortunate. When Buford started saying we had no customers, I think we did the traditional work close with your friends, family, and we had two churches that we worked with a lot on, friends that attended there. Our kids went to Catholic schools, and so we had lots of connections there. And we just did a lot of networking within our circles and until kind of word of mouth grew. Honestly, when he was just growing based on that, we started out probably in our garage and we moved to a small shop. And really, I just did the accounting behind it. I really just kept books for tax purposes until I got there full time and had more time to invest in the company. I researched more, became more knowledgeable about the industry, and realized we were very fortunate that we were able to have some profits, but we weren't running that company like we should. You know, an HVAC contractor business runs much different than a wholesaler. So once I started getting into that, I read more and we joined the best practice group and learned how to read our numbers, let our numbers tell a story. Our business changed overnight. We went through a rebranding. I had to recreate our whole website. At that point, it was just informational only. We moved to Service Titan field service management system. I mean, we went full bore. That first year was when I came on full time. It was a game changer for us, but it was also a lot of employees couldn't handle the change. And we went through a big disruption, a very big disruption. And it eventually paid off. I mean, it took a while with those changes coming in. I'd say 2 years before we had a culture change, realizing we're all in this together and wanting it to grow.
That's a big change and a little scary, probably. So this all happened after you joined ServiceNation Alliance, is that right?
Yes. Yes.
So what was it that made you guys decide to join ServiceNation Alliance? What was the main event?
Well, it was a funny story. As I was trying to just educate myself more, I kept running across companies that were at, I don't know how, I was just researching more on the internet. I kept running into this one company, and you'll probably be tickled because so many of us say is Hunter Heating and Air. And I'm thinking, what is going on with this Hunter guy? And somehow I just keep researching. And we were Lennox dealers at the time. And we met Crystal Williams there. Yeah. And she said, hey, you ever heard of Service Roundtable? And I thought, oh my gosh, I never have. As much as I'm trying to read trade magazines. So we invested in that. And that's probably where I learned more about Chris. And Buford called me one day and he said, hey, they're doing this thing called Success Day in Miami. You need to go, because Chris is going to be there. And I thought, okay, I'm scared to do this all by myself. But, you know, we made arrangements and I went down. What did we do it in a week? Made arrangements, went down there by myself and went to Success Day. There's a funny story behind that particular day. The hotel got flooded and I was put in another hotel with two guys. And this is the day I met you too, David. I had Chris Hunter and a guy named Matt Michelle was supposed to meet me down in the hotel room to bring me to dinner. And I thought I was in heaven. I was, you're kidding. I'm going to get full attention from these two guys, 30 minutes in the car. So it was absolutely a wonderful experience for me. I spent a wonderful day with Success Day. And by the time I ended that next day, I called Buford and I said, you better be ready to work because I'm writing check because we are going to change this. And so we've been starting to struggle a little bit with the growth. You know, when you grow too fast and everybody had their own game plan and it was time for us to pull back. And we really found ServiceNation at the perfect time for our business.
Well, good. So you joined ServiceNation, rebranded, got a new operating system, ServiceTitan, started hiring and changing the compensation plans, I'm guessing, which probably upset some people and they left. You had to hire more people.
Yeah, most definitely.
Did it improve your profitability then?
Well, the first year really didn't because we were spending so much money. But in my mind, I knew you can't get anywhere if you don't spend the money. I was making the investment. And really, I think the first year I was okay with it. But then we started seeing some lack of profits again that we even had a loss. And that had never happened to us. And so we just really dug in deep and we were able to get with a great AB group that really made us study those numbers in a way that we made a drastic turnaround. I would say the number one thing that made the difference is we made the investment and we participated 100%. If we were told to do something, we did it. We went back and said, we did it. What else can we do? And we went from, I think that year, we were almost $100,000 in losses. Mm-hmm. And we flipped it to like right break even. And then the next year, we were over $150,000 in profits. So it was a drastic change within that time period.
Yeah. Those investments paid off. Well, good for you guys. That's a fantastic story. So at some point, you guys started getting interest from private equity companies and other companies interested in purchasing your company. How long did you operate until that started happening?
Probably 4 years after I became full-time, after we made that change. It's about 4 years that we had been approached.
And so how did that process go?
Well, it was a phone call that you never take because you get them all the time. And one day I had a little time, so I thought, well, I'm just going to see what this process is about. So I listened to a gentleman and he asked me some questions. And obviously I was able to answer it through my education through ServiceNation. And when he was asking about a lot of the KPIs is the main thing that they want to look at and judge you on. So I was able to answer questions. He said, would you mind having somebody else give you a call? And so, yeah. And I listened to him and, you know, a couple of weeks later, he made an offer. And then I thought, I might want to tell my wife about this. I told her and her first reaction was absolutely not. We're not doing this. And then basically we had some conversations with John and Vicky LaPlante and some others in the industry to talk about the options and what was going on. And we contacted a broker to visit with him to kind of see if the offer was, you know, fair and legit. And it was, and we felt like it was. So that's how we kind of move forward.
Talk a little bit about the process of selling. You know, there's the initial offer, a letter of understanding, and then, you know, a bunch of unpleasant due diligence, then the eventual signing of it all. And then, you know, you decide what you're doing after. Talk us through all of that.
I had already been through a due diligence with that wholesaler when we sold. We actually sold to Ferguson. And so they had teams of people.
That's a lot of fun, isn't it? I mean, you really enjoy going through them auditing every bit of your business and asking a lot of questions. That's usually a lot of fun, isn't it?
Well, I tell you what, it was hard enough the first time, but the second time when you're doing it for your own company and you realize that there could be things hidden that maybe you didn't want to show or you didn't want to admit you had. I was teasing someone the other day. It felt like getting undressed in front of a bunch of strangers, not once, not twice, podcast, but almost three different times. You know, your gut.
Good analogy, yeah.
Almost certainly, and very humbling, but the process itself, very intense, but I knew how to do that. I knew our numbers were clear and available and organized and in the right structure, so I could provide that. But it became almost a 24-hour project. I mean, this, when I did it the first time, it was over 6-7 months. But when we did it for our company here, it was so quick. I mean, within 60 days, sure, we went from letter of intent to closing. And you have to be ready for that. You have to be prepared mentally, physically, and you still have to run your company. It's still secret. You have to ask everybody to help get you all this information, and they don't know why you're asking for information. It's important to immediately get a team of professionals to help you. I had great relationships already with an attorney in town and CPA accounting firm that I worked with that knew our business. And so they jumped right in and helped us right away. I did, like Buford said, we did contact a broker just because we said someone had told us you should always have also someone else represent you visiting with the proposed company. And we just used him very quickly. I mean, he sat in the first phone call or two, but I feel like we were an anomaly for him because of the condition we've had our financial statements and all our documents.
I'm not understanding about the broker. So did you pay him just to attend the meetings and to make sure that you weren't missing anything, or was he just there for a short period of time?
Couple things. Like Buford said, we kind of reached out to him first that he did research for us on the particular private equity company.
Oh, yeah.
To drill down and make sure that, you know, they were legit and what historical was. I thought that was really important because I didn't really have the expertise to do that. He helped with the letter of intent where we started kind of negotiating some of their factors. My attorney did more financial side, but he knew what was negotiable for our industry. So he helped me with that term. And then kind of that first introduction, knowing what they're buying, what we're selling, we're all on the same page. And I think they also can go to great lengths and help him more in the due diligence, but he really just kind of sat in on a conference call as a third party. I think it also gave us weight that you couldn't like hide something from us. You know, we were going to make sure we had someone ask the right questions.
Yeah, makes sense. If you haven't been through that very much, you know, having somebody that has been through it more than once, a few times, it really could be very helpful, couldn't it? That's a great idea.
Most certainly. He did also run through and go, okay, let me make sure there's nobody else in your area that would be interested for any kind of counter offering before you just jumped into this. So we researched that for a while too.
Great idea. I mean, it'd be nice if you could have two companies bidding against each other, right?
Oh, yes, most certainly.
So, Buford, how did you feel about going through this whole process? I mean, there's sort of a tedious factor to it, and the uncomfortable feeling, as Kim described it, of getting undressed multiple times in front of a bunch of strangers. But there's also, you know, it's your baby, right? You created this thing, and you're getting ready to sell it to other people.
It's kind of humbling in a way, because everything that you've built up, somebody wants to buy, which is a good thing. But on the other side, that was my identity for almost 15 years.
Yeah.
So there was good and bad. And, you know, the good was a check in the bank at the end. But, you know, I wasn't prepared for that as well as I thought I was, even though I continued to work for them for a while through the transition. It wasn't my baby anymore. It was their baby. Yeah. And so, you know, I think that's what people don't look at as much as, you know, yeah, we're getting paid, but you have all the blood, sweat, and tears of getting it to this point, and now it's not yours anymore. So it was a little strange.
I think one of the points that we discussed a lot, David, was we didn't want to disappoint our customers. We didn't want to disappoint our employees, and we didn't want to disappoint the community, because we felt like we were doing our community a great service and got very involved in it. And we were nervous in that transition.
Yeah, I can see that. So when you were going through this process, it's awkward and difficult to manage this with your employees. You know, sometimes one reason or another, you have to tell everybody in the company what you're thinking about doing. Sometimes it's best to keep it a secret. Sometimes you have to bring in a few people. How did it work for you guys?
We just kept it quiet. We didn't tell anybody until a day or two after the sale, as a matter of fact. And when you get back to the final part, I want to just hit on that. It's pretty anticlimactic. You have everybody on the phone and you just basically do an e-signature and you're done. So it was kind of that part was kind of anticlimactic, but with the employees, nobody knew until it was over. We didn't want them to buy something that had a mass exodus or people to be worrying, because the unknown, a lot of people are more the unknown until we could get them to come in and give their little speech and talk to the employees and introduce them. That was the first time anybody knew.
Someone gave us great advice one time. I don't remember where it came from, but it was about this transition. And he said during that change, and Buford did a great job with this, and he did it more on the, you know, with the technicians. I think the office staff had my back. They knew where I was coming from, but the technicians were a little bit more nervous. Every day he would say, this is where we were yesterday. This is what we're doing today. And this is what our plan is for tomorrow. And kind of did a short summary of that every single day. And if I don't know something, we'll find it out. And as soon as we know, we'll let you know. And I think that calmed some fears. And
so that was what you did after you announced it to everybody. You said this was the steps we're going through.
Yeah. Okay. And just to keep them involved, because like I said, fear of the unknown is what, and I don't know that we lost anybody immediately in the transition. Obviously, it's very volatile business that we're in, and people like to hire people away and stuff like that. But we kept our crew intact for the most part, at least 8-9 months after. Now, some of them did change careers and do some things that left, but for the most part, the majority are still there today.
Man, good for you. That's quite a testament to the kind of organization you built. Way to go. So you continued working with them for a while. And of course, you had to sign a non-compete, I imagine, right? So you weren't able to open up another heating and air conditioning business in that market for, I don't know, some period of time, 3 to 5 years, something like that. And you worked with them through the transition. Is that right?
Yes.
And did you stay any after that transition period, or did you, you know, just stay there for a few months and then you left?
I was there for a little while, and they were a good company to work with there. Kim left before I did, and then I left. It was just time for a change. It wasn't mine anymore, and I was looking to do something different in life.
All right. Yeah. Thinking if I wanted this rat race, I would have stayed in it myself.
Yeah. Well, it's different working for other people, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, certainly.
Yeah, it's a different thing when you're working long hours and taking calls on the weekend and doing all this other stuff and trying to make quick changes. It's your company and it doesn't feel so bad. But when you're doing it for somebody else, it feels a little different.
Definitely when your friends were calling or the community was having expectations that we couldn't control anymore. I feel like we both thought that'd be great to also work for a larger company and maybe help them, but then realizing, you know, that was hard to do. I just pretty much kept the books for them for a while until they moved to their systems. But I do want to end with this one thing as far as about that transition. When we both were deciding, hey, we were done with this, you know, because there's so much going on that first year just with the numbers and truing up your numbers and stuff like that, that when it finally got to a routine and we talked about it and we both came, you know, were given our notices. I have to go on and on, David, about Service Nation because they were a game changer in our life. And I worked with the private equity firm more than Buford did. He worked on the day-to-day with the operating company. Mm-hmm. And so I was working with the actual private equity. And I had sent my notice into them and other people. And the CFO of the private equity company had emailed me back and had said, it's been a pleasure to work with you. You're a rarity in that you're one of the few in our acquisitions who gets it. And I had that posted on my computer because I figured that was the best compliment that Buford and I ever had gotten. We were the smallest company that they bought. And we had our stuff together like no one else did.
Well, that is quite a testament. That's great. When you have everything in place, it makes the acquisition so much easier. And the people that are acquiring, first of all, they're willing to pay more. And secondly, it makes that transition just go so much better for everybody. So yes. Kudos to you guys. That's great.
Thank you.
So when did this close? It was 2021. Is that right?
Yeah. Oh, it's 2 years now, right at 2 years.
Over 2 years.
Yeah. September in 2021.
Wow.
So, one of our main points of not selling was because we weren't sure what we were going to do without all the relationships and the people we met in the industry. And we were scared, you know, that was really important to us. We had people we could share things with that understood our life. And we were thinking, what's going to happen? So with the transitions of everything that was going on in your world and others at Service Nation, we were encouraged to stay on through the program and become premier coaches. And I felt like we were singing hallelujah because we weren't losing everything. We still had our love, right? We both love the industry.
Right. Yeah, it's a close-knit industry too, right? You know, you guys and I know a lot of people in common. They're really good people, work hard, salt of the earth kind of people, really nice, you know, and you don't want to lose those relationships. It would be doubly hard to sell your company and then cut yourself off from all those people. So you maintain those relationships by becoming premier coaches.
Yes.
So how do you like being coaches? What does it feel like? And what kind of coaching do you guys do?
Well, I primarily do operational, anything from pricing to warehousing. And like we talked earlier with the strategies on financing and stuff like that. And it's just fun to help people. And I think we have a passion because we receive so much love and support that we're able to give back to others now in the same way that we received. You know, for us, that just makes your day when you work with somebody and then next month, you know, you can see changes happening and they're excited and then they have a little bit, they want to go a little further and you help a little more and they can see how this thing is really affecting their life and their business and their employees. So that's the exciting part that we're still able to be a part of. At least that's my perspective.
Yeah. Isn't that the best thing in the world? When you help a small business person, you know, you make such an immediate impact. You impact their business, their lives, their families' lives, their coworkers' lives, and ultimately it ends up helping the community. It's really a fabulous thing.
It is. I help on the financial side as every new member joins that they get a part of their onboarding, a financial review just to help them. I say set up their numbers to be successful in the program, you know, not be intimidated on dashboards and KPIs and kind of help them through that process. The most benefit you'll get is doing this side of it. And it's not a surprise. Most people, that's the last thing they want to do is look at numbers and talk about numbers. They don't understand it. They're intimidated by it. So I kind of just handhold them into that process, letting them know how important it is, and then start giving them results and programs where they can learn more about that. So that is wonderful to see that side of it. It's funny, we would have never imagined being on this side, and it's definitely a lot of fun.
It's an interesting thing. People are so anxious about their numbers sometimes when they join Service Nation. They don't know what they don't know sometimes. Yes. They don't understand how the financials work. And then sometimes they're not doing very well. Their financials are terrible and they're losing money. So they're embarrassed about that. Mm-hmm. And I expect what you've discovered is you got to help people get past that, right? Everybody starts from somewhere.
Exactly.
Sometimes it's a good place. Sometimes it's not such a good place, but everybody starts somewhere. And if you don't know what your numbers are, you just can't improve, can you?
No, and I don't want people to be embarrassed. I say really at this point, I'm looking at the structure. I want you to understand how important it is that we're using those numbers and then put them in a certain order and then we can start helping fix those numbers. And I really feel like we're a great testament to it because it's almost embarrassing to me thinking I had the college degree in accounting. And when I sat and looked at our contractor books, I wasn't looking at them the way I should. And so I can tell people, don't be embarrassed. I did the same thing and we made it happen and you can too.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Yeah. Good experience to share with them for sure. So I'm not sure if I'm allowed to ask this question. If you guys don't want to answer it, that's fine. Would you consider getting back into the industry and starting another heating and air conditioning company? Or is that just completely off the books for you?
Oh, I think we would. I think it would be a lot easier.
But we do things different. That's for sure.
To do it right versus how we did it. Fortunately, we lived, learned, and survived through some crazy times. But now knowing what we know, it's not out of the realm of possibilities.
Yeah.
Hard not to get excited about it when you get back and you listen to people and you get back from service world and it's nice not to have to worry about implementing anything when you get home. But I have a whole booklet of new things we can do when we're ready to go again.
That's great. It's hard to get it out of your system, isn't it? There's something about owning a small business. I think once you've done it, that it's just with you forever somehow.
You know, David, I think what also is hard maybe for someone like us is since we grew up in it and so much of our life and conversations are about this industry, our relationship has changed. It's like we don't have those kind of conversations as much anymore, but we can live through them again through other people. But that's been a little bit of a struggle for us. I think we're a lot more quiet around the house, which may not be a bad thing. It wasn't argumentative. It's just that we always had something to talk about.
Yeah.
You know? But I think, you know, we're finding that. That's a big transition when you don't have it. Just even people don't think about that. Your relationship together changes.
Yeah, really insightful point. So did you guys move after you sold? Were you in Fort Smith before? Did you stay in Fort Smith or did you move?
We're still here. Yeah, we've been here. We're still here.
Yeah, I've heard some contractors have said that they will get calls from people in the community saying, hey, so-and-so came by the house and they just aren't doing it the way that they used to do it.
You know? I always gotten those calls. Yeah, all our parents are here. Our daughters are here. If not, they're an hour away. And so, and we love our community.
Well, it's certainly a beautiful part of the country, too.
Yeah. And one of the things they did is they actually changed our name. So in a few years, nobody will remember us anyway.
Well, they won't remember the name of the company, but they'll remember you guys. You guys have been in the industry a while. You're coaches now. You've seen a number of successful companies. You've seen those companies that aren't so successful. What advice would you give contractors in our industry who want to be successful like the two of you?
I would say you have to know your numbers and you have to implement. No matter how many meetings you go to and you learn all this great information, if it sits on your desk when you get home, it's doing you no good. And you wasted that time because I feel like there's a lot of contractors, no matter what best practices group they're in, they're the same way that they were 5 years ago because they haven't implemented anything into their business.
Yeah, good point. Knowing something isn't good enough. You got to be able to implement.
I think we don't celebrate our successes enough. We always want more, do more. And I feel like we became better as individuals, as a company, and as a team with our employees when we sat back and celebrated those successes. We started implementing at the end of every one of our meetings, tell me something good, and we'd go around the room and everybody would tell us something good. And the positivity and the happiness and the success would just help us all kind of get going again for the day. I just feel like that was a big game changer for us. And people need to slow down and remember, we're here for a reason. Our hard work made this happen, and let's celebrate it.
That's a great practice. I agree. You know, it's so easy, especially for as managers, we focus on what's wrong because we got to go out and fix it, right? But we often overlook the positive, and there's so many positive things to celebrate. That's a great one. So to wrap up, if somebody wanted to contact you guys, what would be a good way for them to do that?
Probably the best would be through our emails. Hey, the letter K, Martin, at revolution-coach.com. And Buford's would be B, Martin, at revolution-coach.com.
revolution-coach.com. Got it. Well, thank you guys so much for doing this. This was a lot of fun. I loved hearing the stories, and I think people will get a lot of great information by listening to this. So thank you so much for doing this with me.
Well, thank you. We've been listening to your podcast for a long time, so I feel very privileged to be on the other side of it. We totally have enjoyed that.
We're always looking for good ideas and interviews for our podcast. If you have an idea or maybe you think you should be interviewed, just shoot an email to profilesinprosperity@serviceroundtable.com. That's profilesinprosperity@serviceroundtable.com. If you think what we're doing has any value, it would be very helpful if you would give us a great rating on iTunes. Thanks for your support. Hope to see you again soon. Bye.